I'm very thankful to have as our speaker this evening Elder Nicholas Denham, and I ask for you to give him your undivided attention, your prayers, and your smiles.
Thank you, Brother Rollin, for that gracious introduction. It's been a long number of years, for sure, that Brother Rollin and I have been acquainted. And is it? Maybe it's I. I'll start over again. Can you hear me now? Did it come through? It's been a long number of years that Brother Rollin and I have been associated together in the large work.
We've got a new man up here.
Well, that's all right. We all have to learn. Sometimes we have to test these machines out so that they can do the right kind of a job. If it won't work, I can, unless my voice gives out on me here. Is it working now? Okay. No, I was just thinking. And I can't tell you how many years it's been. But I know I was a bit younger than I am now. And Brother Bell came to me one day, and he said, Nicholas, could you make trips down to Collins and hold meetings down there regularly, say once or twice a month, and I said, I'll do my best. Brother Rollin was one of the first ones that I saw, and I well remember. And he was always there listening. You know, he's done me a lot of good, the same as he's done you a lot of good over the years. And I appreciate it. But you've all done me a lot of good. I was thinking in wondering what I might say that would be beneficial, encouraging, and in thinking over some of the thoughts that came to me, I thought of my first inspiration, one that very few of you, I think Brother Rollin and Sister June were here long enough back to remember what I'm speaking of. And of course, my Sister Margaret before me knew better even. I'm just trying to shake a cold, so My voice doesn't want to do just right this evening, so I hope you'll pardon me for my clearing out my voice box here every once in a while. Excuse me. But that first inspiration was my mother. And I thought a lot about her as this particular thought came. And the examples that she set before me. Now, I'm not planning to give a Mother's Day sermon tonight, but I just want to point out a thing or two. Some of the things which she set before me that have been an inspiration to me down through the years. and how much we, you and I, need to be an inspiration to those who look to us. Not only our own children, but each of us as brothers and sisters to the younger ones who look to us for example. I don't think I ever attended a prayer service, but what I heard my mother pray. She sat up close to the front on about the second or third row, or second or third seat. Of course, I'm pointing in here as though I were standing in the temple lot, because that's where it was. And by the way, she was born almost within a stone's throw of the temple lot, down where the auditorium now stands. So it was a part of her life. And I remember as she would get up and bear testimony of God's goodness to her, that her tears overflowed. And that was often. I don't know that I remember a prayer service in which she failed to bear testimony of God's goodness to her. And those testimonies were so strong and so filled with the Spirit of God that, as I say, the tears ran down her face. I remember when I was a boy of hearing of a voice and going to see what was going on, and it was my mother praying. You know, the Savior said, go into your secret closets, and when you shut the door, then pray. And He gave us a model by which to follow. She did that very thing. And I hope we all do that very thing. I heard some very encouraging words as we were driving in. Sister Gladys rode in with us and told us of the prayer circle that is attended by a number of you sisters at a certain time, and some of the things that took place, and my heart was delighted to know that these things were taking place. Oh, what a help. Oh, what an example is set before our younger people. And I was thrilled to hear her speak of a little girl who joined in with her parents and her aunts, or her parent, her mother and her aunts, and others that were there to pray. Little girl. What could be sweeter than for us to learn, to partake, and to participate in such services while we're little? And it's because of the examples that we, the older ones, set before our young people that encourages them and makes them to realize the importance of these things that carry them through. Excuse me. I've thought back of the examples that were given to me, not only by my mother and my father, but by the ministry as far back as I have a memory. And how I delighted to come in to a room where the things of Christ were being spoken of and discussed in homes. I'm sorry, this affliction I've got tonight that keeps interfering. And how those things made an impression upon my mind and made me desire to hear more. And I remember as I became a teenager, and some of you may have heard me say this before, that I heard questions put by my seniors, the older people of the church, saying, how are we going to hold the young people? And you know, I heard that and I heard it and I heard it, and finally I grew a little bit weary of hearing it. Because I had the answer. And I couldn't understand why they didn't. And that answer was simple. God's work and His work, or His word, is simple. If we just stop to try to understand. The answer was this. If you, and that was the older people I was speaking of, and finally, I got up and voiced it. If you will keep a high degree of spirituality in the church, you won't have to worry about holding the young people. And you know, today, I have not yet changed my mind. I think that is exactly the thing that we need to dwell on. And if we're not keeping our spirituality high enough, we'd better get it up there. Because that's the thing that's going to hold our young people. We're competing today, as we all know, with probably the greatest pressures upon young people and upon old ones that has ever hit since the flood. Because the Lord made this statement, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And as I was talking to my Sunday school class this morning of young people, we were discussing the matter of the coming of Christ and how 600 years or 700 years before Christ, Isaiah was speaking the words of the Master and said, the time is soon to come. The kingdom of heaven is soon to come. And because of the wording, I'm sure it was the coming of the Son the first time. Now, we've heard that over and over, and all my life I've heard, the time is coming soon when Christ shall return. But you know, it's getting awfully, awfully close. I remember back in the 30s and the 40s, that the church was talking about how soon that time would be here. And you know what they were talking about? The decade of the 80s. And we're in it. Now that doesn't mean, and I'm not about to say, that within the next 8 years, Christ is going to come. I don't know that it's going to be within the next 18 years. I don't know when it's going to be. But I have been given assurance that it is very close. And let us not be fooled into believing that it can't be in the 80s. The Lord said that He would cause the last days to be shortened for the elect's sake. Otherwise, there would be no flesh left on the earth. Stop and think about that for a moment. And we're getting so close to the possibility of total destruction that it's got our politicians, our statesmen worldwide worried. Should I say to death? Yes, I think some of them are worried to death. What can we do about it? Last night in the night, there came four questions to my mind. I got up and wrote them down so that I wouldn't forget them. Oh, they've come before. But I thought possibly that is what the Lord would have me to talk about this evening. And I want to voice these questions, not to be accusive, not at all, but to inquire. And if this will help anyone, what a joy. I hope it helps us all, because it's a reminder that I need daily. Do you have the perfect confidence in God? Perfect. Do you believe that what He says is true? Do you believe that He means what He says? Oh, He makes some wonderful promises. Do you have that perfect peace within your mind, within your heart, that passes all understanding? Or is there something that's hindering that peace from being in our mind? I say our because I ask myself these questions too. I try to keep these before me. You know, I was amused. I've got a little granddaughter that loves to sing. I just am delighted to hear that little girl sing. And she comes up with some of the greatest surprises to me every day. She has a new song almost every day, and she gets so that she comes up with her own songs. And of course, I'm delighted with that too. But here is one that she came up with one day, and I never had heard it before. I couldn't begin to sing it to you, and I won't try. But I give you the words. God's still working on me. Let's stop and think about that just a minute. God is still working on me. Do you have that confidence that He is? That's a wonderful portion of obtaining peace, to know that God is still working on me. And I was talking with someone a few days ago about the very fact that whom the Lord loveth, He also chasteneth. Now, I remember when I was a boy, I was getting up to the age that I knew the difference between disobeying my mother and my dad and obeying. And a lot of times I just simply rebelled. I just simply rebelled. I disobeyed. I disobeyed because I wanted to disobey. Why did I want to disobey? Because I wanted to do the thing which I was told not to do. Do we ever? It didn't take my mother very long. My dad left all the disciplining to my mother. It didn't take my mother very long to see right through me, just like that window. And she knew whether I was obedient or whether I was disobedient. And she didn't have to be there always to know it. You know, behind on the kitchen door, on the doorknob, on the back side of the door, which is usually open and the back side out of the way, there hung a little instrument there that my dad used his straight edge razor on every morning before he started shaving his face. It was a very limber, double or two pieces of leather, about this long. The end of each piece was hung together with a leather string that was put over the doorknob. Brother Rollins Green, you know, his dad used a good many of them and wore a good many of them out. He'd stretch this thing out, and he'd take his razor, and he'd run back and forth over that, and then turn it over the other side and run it some more. And when it got through, he'd take a hair out of his head, and he'd cut that hair just as easy as could be. It was sharp. But you know, that wasn't all that razor strap was used for. It sharpened me a good many times, too. And you know, I look back and I'm grateful to a parent that loved me so much that she chastised me, and so did my dad. Only he never did it with the razor strap. I'm afraid if he had, well, it'd been too bad. His eyes could look right through me. And that's all it took. Chastisement. That was a sign my mother and my dad loved me. And the Lord says that's the sign that He loves us, when He chastens us. Third question. Do you have that joy within your heart that fills your soul beyond measure? Does it just run over? Fourthly, do you have that lifting assurance? Sorry. Oop. Is this it? Something came apart.
Oh, I just snapped over there.
Maybe you have to do it. I don't know. There it is. I guess I came in from the back side. Sorry about that. I'm still working. I didn't intend to cause that kind of commotion. Do you have that lifting assurance that God is taking care of that in your life that you can't? Now, we all come to times when we've gone our limit, haven't we? Do we have that lifting assurance that'll carry us through, that does carry us through? Or do we just stumble through? I want to read a statement made by Nephi, which I think is so comforting, along this line, and it's found in the fourth chapter of 1 Nephi. And preceding this particular passage is the story of Nephi's vision. You remember his father reported that he had seen a vision, and he related to the family what this vision contained. And Nephi was desirous that he might see it too. And so he appealed to the Lord to show him what he had shown his father. And he showed him. And starting with the first verse in the fourth chapter, if you got your Book of Mormon, well, I hope you'll follow along with me. And it came to pass that after I, Nephi, had been carried away in the Spirit and had seen all these things, I returned to the tent of my father. And it came to pass that I beheld my brethren, and they were disputing one with another concerning the things which my father had spoken unto them. What did Dad mean? What was he talking about? And they were puzzled. For he truly spake many great things unto them which were hard to be understood, save a man should inquire of the Lord. Spiritual things are understood by the Spirit. Spiritual things are not understood by the temporal mind. the natural mind, let me put it. And they being hard in their hearts, therefore they did not look unto the Lord as they ought. Now this doesn't say they didn't look unto the Lord. It just says they did not look unto the Lord as they ought. Do we look unto the Lord as we ought? And now our Nephi was grieved because of the hardness of their hearts and also because of the things which I had seen and knew they must unavoidably come to pass because of the great wickedness of the children of men. Oh, how Nephi would have liked to have had a greater influence upon the lives of his children. Have we, as parents, those of us who are, ever seen the time when we would have liked to have had? I tell you, I'm going to have this thing off here yet. Did that get hooked up under there or something? Am I not operating it right or something? Should have hatches there for me. How many times would we like to have taken over and pulled our children out of a situation? There comes a time when we can't. Oh, but how our hearts ache to be able to. And I'm sure Nephi felt that way. And it came to pass that I was overcome because of my afflictions, for I considered that my afflictions were great above all. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever feel like, well, I've had it? There isn't anybody that's come to the situation that I've arrived at. How could anybody have been this unfortunate to have had circumstances come around to this point? Do we ever feel that way? Can we imagine how Job felt when the servant escaped and came to him and said, "All your children have been slain. All your servants have been carried away. All your stock, your flocks, your herds, been stolen away by an enemy." "For I considered that my afflictions were great above all because of the destruction of my people," in other words, his descendants, "for I had beheld their fall." Oh my. "And it came to pass that after I had received strength, I spake unto my brethren, desiring to know of them the cause of their disputations. And they said, Behold, we cannot understand the words which our father hath spoken concerning the natural branches of the olive tree, and also concerning the Gentiles." What did he mean by these things? "And I said unto them, Have you inquired of the Lord?" "And they said unto me, We've not. For the Lord maketh no such thing known to us. Did you ever take that attitude? Did you ever feel that way? But behold, I said unto them, how is it that ye do not keep the commandments of the Lord? How is it that ye will perish because of the hardness of your hearts? Now I want you to notice this next verse. What a promise. Do you not remember the things which the Lord hath said? If ye will not harden your hearts and ask me in faith, believing that ye shall receive, with diligence in keeping my commandments, surely these things shall be made known unto you. You know, I've been a member of the church, oh, who cares how long? Almost all my life. I was 10 years old when I was baptized. How I remember that wonderful day when I first heard the most beautiful song that ever graced my ears. It caused me to just thrill all over. It caused a warmth to come into my chest that filled me to overflowing. And it took me years to realize the source of that beautiful song. Because I heard it. I heard it so clearly and so distinctly that I was able to hum it the rest of my life. And it still brings me that thrill. If ye will not harden your hearts and ask me in faith, believing that ye shall receive, with diligence in keeping my commandments, surely these things shall be made known unto you. Well, I mentioned how long I've been in the church. That isn't so important. But there is something that is. I have heard over and over again, what shall we do? You ever hear it? What shall we do? And after reading this yesterday, there arose a great big question in my mind. Have we, as God's children, as the Church of Christ, fail to apply this wonderful promise? Now, I'm not going to say yes. I'm going to say it looks like it. Somewhere. Somehow. And why do I say it looks like it? because I have heard the testimonies of my brothers and sisters over all those years. And I've heard some wonderful testimonies, and I understand that there were some very wonderful testimonies given today in this room. And that makes my heart thrill. The Lord hasn't forsaken us, but has He given us all that is available to us? If not, why? Are we lacking? You have to answer that question. I can't. I look at myself and I have to examine myself. But my job is not to examine you. That's your job. But this I know, God's promises are sure. There's no question. They are sure. And if we do our part, if we fulfill our requirements or His requirements of us, oh yes, there's another promise. I have these four little questions written down here. I think I'm through with them. But I want to go to another promise. And you know, this promise was made some 700 years before the birth of Jesus Christ. Isaiah wrote them. But he wrote them after the Lord gave them to him. And you've heard them all your lives. So have I. But let's look at them again. It's the 58th chapter of Isaiah. And they brought me so much comfort. And they brought me some rebuke too. I don't want to hold you over time, but let me hurry through here. Cry aloud, spare not. Lift up thy voice like a trumpet and shew my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet, and here's the message, yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God. I wonder how this sounds about us. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to God. Well, anything wrong with any of that? Nope. Nothing wrong at all. Wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou take us no knowledge? Then he answers, behold, in the day of your fast ye find pleasure and exact all your labors. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate. What's debate? It's a procedure. I got a school teacher or two in here, and he can... And I'd appreciate being corrected if I am going a little bit wrong. So please help me. I'll appreciate it. Excuse me. What's a debate? It's a procedure. Of convincing somebody that I'm right, you're wrong. I never was on a debate team. I never even coached a debate team. But isn't that what a debate is? I'm right. My point is correct. Your point's mistaken. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Oh, may it never be. Ye shall not fast as ye do this day to make your voice to be heard on high. That won't work. Don't do it that way. You've been at it wrong. All right, how should we do it? Is it such a fast that I have chosen a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is that what pleases the Lord, for us to afflict our soul?